Welcome to Untold Stories, a production of the Florida Theater and WJCT Public Media. Tonight's program was recorded May 30th, 2024. The theme, spring.
Okay, so next up is Mike Favo. Yeah, I know he's had people flying in for this, and very exciting. Mike reached out and he actually did something that made me so happy. He actually submitted a 2-minute video, like we request, and had an idea for a story, and I liked it. And I said, you know, we need to get together and see how we could develop it before I actually make the final decision. So we explored, and his story is amazing. And so please welcome Mike. Favor.
Always look on the bright side of work. Da 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 da. Always look on the bright side of work. Da 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 da.
In September of 2006, I took a promotion. Our family moved from Greenville, Mississippi to Jacksonville, Florida. It was my 8th move in 24 years. It was the 6th move my wife made with me. Everybody always asks, where did you like living the most? Well, I liked it everywhere. And I've lived everywhere, quite frankly. And we built a routine. So when we moved to a new town, first we found a good house in a good neighborhood. Then we looked for a good school for our kids. And then we looked for social gathering places. Our first one, in fact, it was Joe's Crab Shack out of the beach. And the managers and their spouses, we had a meet and greet out there, and we got to look at the ocean from the bar. It was really a wonderful day. And and I encourage suggestions. I'm always interested in finding a new place. One afternoon, my top manager and a co-conspirator, they kind of stormed my office. And they said, we have a great idea for you, Mike. And I was like, a great idea. They said, you'll love it, you'll love it. We want to take the consulting engineers who are here today, we want to take them to Southern Grill for dinner and trivia. And I was like, okay. Well, they were right. 4 hours later, we're in the Southern Grill. We're answering questions. There's pitchers of beer from corner to corner on the table. And we won. And so it was pretty cool. And then there's Jack's Ale Trail, so I think everybody knows that. And Charlie, he was my boss in Chicago, and he would come to visit on occasion. And one visit, he says, Mike, about this Jack's Ale Trail, you know, I'd like to check it out. And he says, I know you don't drink, and I know you don't mind that I don't drink, so let's do that. And so we had dinner with the managers, and only one was brave enough to join us, and we headed off to Bold City. So, Bold City. So, tap rooms. I love tap rooms. They're rustic. They have cornhole. They have giant Jenga. They have these funky brews called fisticuffs and moonshadow. And I just love the environment, and I love the smell. I know. Who loves the smell of a tap room? I love the smell of a tap room because it takes me back to my college days in the fraternity. Yeah, because the whole fraternity house smells like a tap room, quite frankly. And so there I was, a non-drinker in a fraternity house. But I loved, you know, the laughter, the music, the people. I loved the environment. And I figured out a non-drinker was the perfect guy to serve, to attend the bar. And so that's what I started doing. And so I was in with the action, in with the fun, and I served every girl that came to the party drinks all night. So it was really good. So why I like tap rooms is when I go in a tap room and I smell those smells, my 20-something me in the fraternity comes rushing back into my brain. So 20-something me finished college, and I landed a job in a gypsum mine and wallboard plant in rural eastern Iowa. It was the perfect job for me. As a project engineer, I loved it. I got dirty, I got dusty every day. One day I might be 600 feet underground with diesel mine trucks. Another day I was 120 feet up in the air, climbing down the ladder in the stem of the water tower doing an inspection. You know, it was a great place. Well, on April 13th of 1985, I had an assignment, and it was, we're going to do some demolition in the office, Mike. You got to let the crew in, go through the safety list, and go through the job list. Well, that was my official assignment. The mechanics cornered me, and they said, here's your unofficial assignment. Don't be late, college boy. And you better have some donuts. And then Dale Perkins, one of our ancient mechanics, he says to me, and there better be some crawlers. I said, all right. So April 13th, 6:40 a.m., the donut shop had no line. It was great. So by 6:40 a.m., I'm headed north on Highway 61. I've got tunes playing in my car. I've got 24 donuts in the passenger seat. I'm on time. I'm feeling good. This project's going to go great. I'm halfway to work. I'm rolling up this hill. Well, at the top of the hill, as I cleared it, I see a car coming straight at me. And he's in my lane. In fact, I see two cars. And this one's passing the other one. Well, my life didn't pass before my eyes, but I could see the driver being passed, and it was flashing through his pretty fast. And he's looking left at the guy passing him, and he looks straight at me, and his eyes and his face say it all. They're pleading, don't wreck all of us. I turned hard right. I wasn't unconscious very long. When I came to, it felt odd. The car was kind of at a slant. But then I heard this voice. It came in my head. It was warm. And it said, everything's going to be all right. I relaxed completely. In fact, I thought, wow, we didn't collide. I was lucky. And then I thought, what about those donuts? And so I looked to my right, and they had come off the seat, and they were on the floor. And I started to lean up to reach for them, and I heard another voice. And it was behind me, and it was outside the car, and it was, don't move. You're hurt bad. Don't look left. You're hurt really bad. So I closed my eyes, and I started saying Hail Marys. And I heard sirens, and there was commotion, and they're lifting me up, and they're moving me in the back of the truck. We're making the trip in, and the questions start. Do you know your blood type? A positive. You know, where are you headed? To work, to let a crew in. Have you been drinking? I said, no. Did you have any breakfast? I said, I had a crawler. And this went on until we got, well, until I was outside the room to surgery. And I'm laying on the gurney, my eyes are shut, Hail Mary, Our Father. And I still don't feel any pain, but I hear this, another warm voice, and she's right beside me, and she says, Mr. Favo, and she slides a pen in my hand. She says, we need you to sign the permission slip so we can save you. And she says, I'm going to hold the clipboard in front of your face. Just reach up and sign it. And so I open my eyes, and I give a crazy signature, and she pulls it away, and I see I've smeared blood all over it from my hands. And into surgery I go. I lost 2 days. So 2 days later, I'm in traction, and I'm coming to, and I'm getting my wits about me, and the doctors come to see me. They say, you did really well, but you have another surgery. Okay, so I need to talk to my parents. So I call home, and my mother answers. And first, she's full of love and prayers, and she tells me how good the first surgery went. And then she says, Mike, you have a decision you have to make. You have two options. They can take screws and a plate, and they can screw your broken bones and your shoulder back together, or you can be in traction for 6 months, keeping it completely immobile. I love to move, and I wanted out of this as quickly as possible. Well, the doctors, they used a Phillips head screwdriver, put me back together. So A hard right turn saved my life from being killed by a drunk driver. Cops told me that he had been drinking in Illinois until 4 a.m., and he had left the bar. He had gone home and filled his car with beer, bait, and fishing equipment, and headed south to go fishing. 70 miles later, he ran into me. And he was double the legal limit. And it was his third DUI. And he was only a year or two older than me. And he wrecked my car. My car was wrecked. I was wrecked. I got 5 pints of blood. I lost my spleen. I smashed up several teeth. And my arm, well, when he had hit me, he ran down the side of my car because the right turn got me not all the way around. And he ran down the side of my car, and it shoved my arm into my shoulder, and my shoulder shattered, and my bones broke. And one of my stitches was right here below my earlobe because the bone had come through and cut me. So with the steel plate and screws, they put me back together. And they stapled me here, they stapled me everywhere. But 10 days later, I'm back home in Pennsylvania with my parents. And, you know, Dad was great. Dads are always great. Mom, she was super. My mother was a coach to everyone, including my 3 brothers and my 5 sisters. And she had delivered 9 kids. And then 8 years earlier, she had survived a cancer treatment. And so I knew, she knew how to recover me. So I was in the right place. So it kind of went like this. Your father will be home at lunch. He's going to want to see those staples, so I'm not changing the dressing till then. At 2 o'clock, I'm going to the store. You're coming with me. Okay. Thursday, your sister has a track meet. I'll wash your sling ahead of time so it's presentable. We're going to go, and we'll go out to dinner afterwards. And, you know, she got it. Her philosophy was simple. Heal. Don't let your accident make your life. You know, and just keep moving. And so I did. And before long, I was back in rural eastern Iowa, half-time and then full-time. And my coworkers were great. I had 5 coworkers donate blood so that I wouldn't have to pay for the blood I received in the hospital. And they were cool people. And 3 days a week, I'd come back to my desk towards the end of the shift, and there'd be food on it with a note, you know, you need this, get well faster. And then there was Sylvia. So Sylvia worked in the lab, and she was a very kind-hearted soul, and she was a very surly soul. And I ran into her one day, and she says, "You're going to sue him, right?" I was like, "No, Sylvia, I had full coverage on insurance. I'm fine." And he declared bankruptcy. She said, "No, he hurt you. He hurt you bad. You need to sue him." And I said, "Sylvia, he needs his money more than I need his money, and there's been enough pain. I don't want any more pain. I just want to heal. I want to move on." And so I'm leaving the lab. "You should still sue him." I heard that question from everybody. They all wanted to know, was I going to sue? Well, I didn't sue. And he didn't go to jail. And we both headed off on our lives. But, you know, things were different. So, for example, I really miss being able to lift my left arm, you know. And I missed doing pull-ups. But what was really weird was I would go to a party, and I'd go into the party, and drinking would start to slow, or sometimes it stopped. And then I had a lot of people ask me to be their designated driver, and I had a lot of people who needed a designated driver tell me they had a designated driver. And, you know, it was really uncomfortable. And then there was this guy, Jamie. So, coworker of mine and I, we had to go to a meeting in Chicago for training. We got there, the hospitality suite was packed and everybody's socializing. My coworker turns to me and he says, "You have to meet Jamie. He almost got killed by a drunk driver too." And he drags me across the floor and introduces me to Jamie, and he says to Jamie, "Jamie, Mike almost got killed by a drunk. You need to meet him." And I was like fresh meat to a tiger at the zoo. And Jamie looks at me and he's like, "Did you join MAD? Do you preach at high schools against drinking? Did you sue?" And I heard, he told me everything. It was too much information. It was too much information. And I decided, I don't want to ever sound or look like that. So I decided I needed to, spring, I needed to grow some new shoots from my old non-drinking fraternity roots. And I made a pact with myself. I decided I'm never going to say no to going out to bars. And when I go, I shouldn't tell you this, but when I go, I'm always going to buy a round. So I headed into life like that. And, well, it works. So, for example, several months ago, my wife, the talented dancer, says, "I'm going to Beer and Ballet next week. I think you should come along." So I have been in the game room at Arbwoof doing extremely ugly pliés. Surrounded by talented dancers who are holding their beers up, drinking Hop Oddity and Notorious Fig. And they're having a great time, and I had a great time too. And so another time, I told you about Charlie. So Charlie and I, we went to the, I didn't tell you about Charlie, did I? I didn't. Well, Charlie, I started to tell you, he came and we went to Bold City, so I did tell you about Charlie. See, this is what happens when you don't drink, you forget these things. So Charlie and I, we did finish half of the Jack's Ale Trail. And the engineer came with us, and Charlie, he sampled every brew and every ale along the lines, and I drank many, many club sodas. And the engineer who tagged along, well, Charlie and I coached him because he wanted to get the phone number of this pretty dolphin trainer from Brunswick, Georgia, that we all met while we were trying to win Giant Jenga. And, you have to be careful when you make a pact like this because you really don't know where it'll land you. And it landed me one day in a karaoke bar on a cruise ship with seven backup singers behind me, backup dancers. And I sang one of my favorite songs from my youth, the theme song from the cartoon Underdog. Ooh, wah, ooh, wah, ooh, wah, ooh. When in this world the headlines read of those whose hearts are filled with greed, who rob and steal from those who need, comes the raid with blinding speed. But underdog, 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 speed of lightning, roar of thunder, fighting all who rob or plunder. Underdog, underdog. Underdog. Now, how that happened, that's an untold story I'm not going to tell. Thank you very much.
So the whole time I'm working with Mike, I'm saying, I don't drink beer. I know none of this culture. What is that? What's that song? What's that? What's Crow? But now I think I'm going to start drinking. Sounds like so much fun.
Untold Stories is a production of the Historic Florida Theater in partnership with WJCT Public Media. Barbara Colicello is the artistic director. Numa Saislin is the president of the Florida Theater. Jeremy Moore and Eric Stanfield recorded the live performances of Untold Stories. The Untold Stories broadcast and podcast was produced by Brady Corum and Letitia Barriola. Saul Lucio is the technical director. The live performances of Untold Stories were made possible by a generous gift from the Wolfberg family.